Keep on pushing. Keep on pushing.
I've got to keep on pushing. Mm-hmm.
I can't stop now. Move up a little higher. Some way or somehow. 'Cause I've got my strength, and it don't make sense not to keep on pushing. Now maybe someday.
That's the civil rights era, right out of the civil rights era of the 1960s. That's Jerry Butler and the Impressions with Keep On Pushing. It's one of their famous anthems and the title track of their most successful album, released in 1964. Of course, apart from Jerry Butler, you're hearing the distinctive falsetto of Curtis Mayfield and the melodious voices of Sam Gooden and Fred Cash. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, December the 9th, and protests over the grand jury decisions in the Eric Garner and Michael Brown cases continue. For the second night in a row, protesters shut down Interstate 80 in Berkeley, California, stalling traffic on the freeway for several hours, while other protesters sat on a train track preventing the train from moving. In Brooklyn, several basketball players warming up for the Nets-Cavaliers game wore T-shirts with Eric Garner's last words, "I can't breathe," printed on them, and protesters greeted fans and the royal couple visiting New York with chants of "Hands up, don't shoot." Not far from the White House, protesters staged a die-in, laying down in the street and blocking traffic on Connecticut Avenue, a major thoroughfare. And protests and demonstrations are being held as part of the nationwide Week of Outrage, meant to draw attention to what is widely regarded as a crisis. I talked yesterday about the bone collectors, people who, and I'm specifically referring to the Reverend Al Sharpton here, and others associated with him, who for whom police killings have become an industry. I recognize that we do have a need for all kinds of specialists in our community, but we don't have a need for this kind of help that comes with a flip side. And it is telling us, on the one hand, that it's about justice. On the other hand, we see it's about capitulation, accommodation, and even cooperation with the system that it supposedly is fighting. Reverend Sharpton has announced that there will be a march, a justice march, on Saturday in Washington. And all of this is supposed to be building toward that march, all of this public pronouncements of late, building toward support for this march. And marches, there's nothing wrong with marches. In fact, marches are very, very useful. If they should happen to bolster or undergird a parallel strategy in action for justice, but we don't have one here. Sharpton and his legal team have done little or nothing with respect to putting the focus where it ought to be in the name of justice. From the very beginning, and I say this because Al Sharpton, more than anybody else, ought to know that in a situation like this, the first thing you call for is an independent special prosecutor. And when I say call for, I don't mean you stand up in front of a microphone and flap your lips. I mean that you have legal papers drawn up and you make a formal application to the court to compel the state to do the job. As I said yesterday, this call for the federal government to come in and fix things is itself a travesty and a ruse, because this is a local matter. And by local, I mean, let's take the situation in New York City. Eric Garner was killed in a confrontation with police officers of the New York Police Department. It is a local matter. The impression that asking for the federal government to step in is a way of saying they'll retake this extra specially, and so we have to treat it extra specially, and so we're calling in the higher authority, the feds, to come in. No, the feds come in when the local efforts have been tried and have failed. And by local efforts, I mean that somewhere there ought to be evidence that the locally elected people, the people in the city council, have done their job to assure that justice is done. The criminal justice system in New York City is under their purview. The functioning of the New York Police Department is under their purview. The functioning of the police commissioner is under their purview. The functioning of the mayor is under their purview. So they have no reason to explain why they need a federal investigation and federal intervention. They have not done their jobs, for which they have been elected, by the way. As I said yesterday, their loyalty is to party, the Democratic Party, and not to the people. Because for them to do their jobs, they necessarily have to confront the system. They necessarily have to engage the party in addressing these yawning contradictions, and they're not about to do that. They're not about to ruffle anybody's feathers. It is against their personal interests to do so. And since that is the highest priority, it will prevail. Eric Garner and justice will take a distant second to that. But we have no evidence at all that the local response has even been implemented. They are not even tackling this question. As I said yesterday, there ought to have been subpoenas flying all over the city of New York, compelling the police commissioner to come before the city council, where, incidentally, African Americans and Latinos make up about half of the seats of the city council, a historic situation. It has not happened before. And precisely at a time that you have such a very significant representation of people of color at local government, precisely at a time that you have some numbers to count on, is precisely the time you have zero power. They haven't even attempted a confrontation with the system. They haven't even attempted accountability. And Eric Garner was killed in August, in July, sorry, in July. August was Michael Brown. From July until now, nobody has organized a commission of inquiry, an open commission where we have the police commissioner dragged before it, and made to account for the fact that twice now, this is his second term around as commissioner of the New York Police Department, earning a very nice salary of about $230,000 a year, and that's not counting perks and other bennies. And the performance of the police officers, including and especially in this particular case with Eric Garner, where we have the officer in question, Daniel Pantaleo, having been sued before on brutality charges by four black men. He's a bad egg and a known bad egg. And why is he there? It means that the police department does not perform its job well, and that is a reflection of the person who's at the top. The buck stops with him. He ought to be fired. And that should be the position of every single black and Latino representative of the city council. But are they doing that? No. They're calling for the feds. Let's hand it to them so we can weasel out of this. At the state level, when I say it's local, I mean also the state. The state apparatus, same thing. Not one member of the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus has stepped forward and said, you know what, this is intolerable, and we are going to demand of the governor the appointment of a special prosecutor. Nothing. They too, let's call in the feds. This way, they don't have to confront the governor. They don't have to ruffle feathers within the Democratic Party. They all agree. Let's not make waves. Let's call in the feds. And here, Sharpton is at one with all of that. He has not criticized the lack of performance at the city council level because his buddy is mayor. They're real tight, you know. Him and de Blasio, who has made a couple of appearances at the National Action Network headquarters, which, by the way, could use a spruce up. It looks very, very tacky. It looks very ghetto. It needs a paint job. It is disgracing the neighborhood. It needs to be brought up to snuff so as not to embarrass the neighborhood. But anyway, he has come there and made nice. And that works well for Sharpton because his focus now is to enthrone himself as the go-to man, being the king of the blacks, the self-anointed king of the blacks, inheriting the title from Jesse Jackson. And now with the march, seeks to enthrone himself as the heir apparent, not the heir apparent, he's already decided he is the heir of Martin Luther King. You know, symbolism is a very big thing in the black community. We had Eric Holder going down to the same church that Martin preached at in order to tell people, just hang in there, be patient. We'll kind of fix some of these regulations. Just hang in. And we have now the march on Washington where Sharpton once again gets to invoke, even by inference, Martin Luther King's name. I am the king of the blacks. You see, what has happened here, and it hasn't been lost on him or many people around him, is that while they thought they had a monopoly on this kind of leadership, a whole different scenario has presented itself. We have a bunch of new people, new faces, with new ideas and new courage on the scene. And it is no longer the idea that we shall overcome and people are singing and swaying and hoping and praying. These are people ready for action, ready to create change. They're not creatures of the system. They are therefore free to confront it. And that's what they're doing. They're not bought. They're not compromised. their genuine leadership. I said before, this is the kind of leadership we've been waiting for. And they may not have graduated from the standard establishment school of leadership, which is a good thing. It works in their favor 1,000%. These are people who have come to understand certain truths, and these are incontrovertible truths, and that is the system is rotten to the core. And we have collaborators with the system. And both are to be denounced, publicly denounced, and just moved out of the way. You have to move them out of the way and go around them. Now, I recognize, truly, I do, that there's a place for everybody, including in this kind of a scenario where you have to get involved in litigation or representing people who are aggrieved, suffering terribly. And one of the provisions of the law is that you are to pursue compensation to the families or survivors of people who have lost their loved ones so terribly and at the hands of public servants of the police department. There is a place for that. And I absolutely favor that you should go after every penny you can get, because this is wrong. And the law provides for proper compensation. But we are also clear that, as Alton Maddox pointed out on this program, this is not a personal injury case. This is a class action. But they're not dealing with the class action. That is to say, they're not dealing with the justice component here. Justice, in the eyes of Sharpton and his team, justice is money. Just give us the money and we will call it justice. I will sanctify it as justice. I will certify it as justice. And in the meantime, nothing has been done to tackle the structural problem here. And it is by design, it is deliberate, and it is the accommodation that they have made with the system. It is the most offensive thing to have happened in the name of the public, in the name of black folks, in the name of Latinos, who are predominantly the victims of this kind of violence, this kind of state violence. Because they are selling the idea that they are championing the rights of the people, and it is a blatant lie. It is a total misrepresentation of what is happening. And it is to the detriment of the community. And that's what is infuriating. Because nothing would have changed as a result of their involvement. And not just with this case. Not just with this case. I talked about the Trayvon Martin case. Same thing. You couldn't have had a more compelling reason to deal with the state in the appropriate manner so that you begin the process of putting building blocks that people coming behind you can draw on for their protection. But no response at all, no objection filed about the prosecutor, no objection filed about the judge's instructions to the jury, no objections filed about the composition of the jury, no objections filed officially about anything, no work done. And literally, we see the consequence of that. Because there was no work done there in the interest of the people, we have Marissa Alexander coming a couple of years later and she felt compelled to strike a deal because she attempted to defend herself in her own home. The work that should have been done in that stand your ground case, although they insist it wasn't a stand your ground defense in the Zimmerman case, in the Trayvon Martin case, affected afterwards Marissa Alexander. And this is the problem we have. A precedent was set in New York itself when Alton Maddox engaged the state, not just on one occasion, but on two occasions, and compelled a very unwilling and obstreperous governor, Mario Cuomo, to appoint a special prosecutor. And it was done with the support of the community, with marches and protests, but with litigation, fierce fighting in the court. And in one case, it almost even came to physical blows with the governor. Had no fear about it. You got to admire that. That is lawyering in the interest of the people. And so because we have that, that set a precedent in all other cases anywhere in the country, because one courageous lawyer stood up and said, we will have justice. And we are dictating the terms of justice. We're not asking you for it. We're demanding it. Absolutely. And that set a precedent all throughout the country. The first time that a special prosecutor was appointed in a racially motivated case. Now, look what we've got. We have people who are doing a deliberate disservice here, hiding behind this curtain of, well, we are out there for the people. You're not. It would be all right to say, look, we are into the civil end of this case. We are handling the payout. We are handling the compensation part of the case. Okay, fine. That's good. This is your area of expertise. That's what you want to concentrate on. Good. Sharpton's role should have been, well, we have that covered. Now we need litigation expertise. We need somebody who could get in there and score victory in the courts. Who can tell us how we do that so that we succeed at getting justice? And then we need experts in legislation and reform so that they can tell us what is needed to update the law and to provide coverage for victims and the families in any future scenario where we have the same thing being played out. No, not at all. Because he's wholly owned by the Democratic Party. He has a vested interest in pleasing the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party has adopted him. And he is thrilled about the fact that he can waltz in and out of the White House, that he can rub elbows and shoulders with the people who make decisions, people with money, people with influence. He is delighted about the fact that in a short span of time, he has gone from the medallion-wearing guy to the Italian suits and silk tie guy. He is now the king of the blacks, recognized by the Republicans and by the Democrats as a force to be reckoned with. He has outshone his mentor, Jesse Jackson. He is out-Jacksoned Jackson. Jackson is now learning from him. And for this, the trade-off is the community. I once did a front page editorial in the paper I edited called The City Sun, in which I said, for the right price, Jesse Jackson will come to your town and completely destroy your revolution. He did that, in fact, in the case where the fight was for a special prosecutor. Mario Cuomo sent for Jesse Jackson, who comes from out of town, and his job was to persuade black folks to not be so rowdy. Don't be so agitated. The governor will do the right thing. Trust me. And of course, that was a ruse. Rather than stand with the people, he stood with the party. And you know Jesse Jackson is not a guy who would do this kind of service for free. And this is where we are. And this is what it is we need to understand. This is the job before the community. It must rid itself of this element. It must expose it. It must own up to it. And it must drive it away. In every endeavor, historically, you look at it, especially areas of struggle that have to do with human rights and the advancement of group progress, you always have people playing a double role. And here, too, is no exception. You're going to call for no justice, no peace, and all of that stuff, and it sounds great, and here's yet another march. But it is all about you and your personal agenda and your professional agenda. And you use the raw emotion of the people, the sincere desire of the people for solutions, the hurt, the pain that they are experiencing. You use all of that in order to transmute it for your own benefit. It is contemptible. It is disgraceful. It is almost sacrilegious, because the leaders that we have had who have done this kind of work have done it in a self-sacrificing way. They have done it with a genuine spirit. They have done it with a good cause and a good mind to achieve some degree of success and justice for their people. But we have these predators coming around. And they love the warm glow of the television cameras. And they love the fact that their images are all over the TV screens. And the sound bites are broadcast on radio. They love the idea that they are on the front page of this magazine or that. Even when the coverage is negative, they love it because they spell their names right. And they have lost a long time ago. They have lost the license and the authority to transact business in our name. And we have faltered. We have refused to publicly condemn them. We allow them to do this. We allow them to get away with it. And we allow the travesty to continue, the shameful misrepresentation of what all this is about. And here we are in 2014, hampered largely by people who are supposed to be doing the job of lifting us up and advancing our cause. And we forgive them. We forgive them the trespasses they have committed and continue to commit against us. Like I said, don't lose sight of this federal intervention business. look at the fact that not any one person at the local level has dared to take on the establishment, including those who describe themselves, oh, I am left of center, I am liberal, I am this, I am that. You're a coward is what you are. That's what you are. And now people have to deal with the idea of what is it that you actually are voting for? Why are you voting? And voting Democrat overwhelmingly because somehow you're psychologically tied to this party. What are you voting for? Not even in a situation so compelling is there a modicum of evidence to suggest that these people take their job seriously and that they have a consciousness that they're there to advance their people. I'll take a little break here and come back and ask the question now. What is it that we are prepared to do? Right after this.
I'll reach that higher goal. I know I can make it with just a little bit of soul. 'Cause I've got my strength, and it don't make sense not to keep on pushing. Now look a look, look a look, a look yonder.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about the crisis within the collectors of bones, making their bones by standing on the bones of their own people. It's a contradiction. It is not new, but it is time that it be put to an end. What are your thoughts? At 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We ought to decide once and for all, this is intolerable, unacceptable. We're not going to have it. We're not going to be played this way. The stakes are so high, and we ought to be clear. Again, if people said, and were very, very straightforward about it, I am only interested in this area because this is the only thing that I can do well, and this is where I come in. I come in and I'm taking care of this part of it. Fine. But you don't try to tell me that this is about justice when there is no evidence that any work was done with respect to justice. You've held news conferences, you've held all kinds of meetings, and protests and demonstrations are scheduled. That is for show. That is a PR job. The evidence suggests no work is being done, no real work is being done in order to advance the cause of justice. From New York, Mark, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, is that me?
Yes, you are on the air.
Wait a minute, is that me?
Yes, you are.
Yes, pardon, I had stepped away for a minute. I think you're providing, Eutrice, greetings to my PRN family out there, but the beloved family. I think you're providing some great analysis about that branch of this whole thing where, you know, their specialty is going after the dollars. It's somewhat obvious, but it's not. I'd like to get some of your thoughts as to, you know, with these young people saying, no, this can't go, a way to bring them in awareness of this. So the people who have those connections or on the social media, I think this is an important aspect that Eutrice elucidates so well that I think that the connection needs to be to the people. And there's a lot of education needed, because last night on the news, you know, where they were covering some of the protests, as it were, a young someone who has the status of being white, because it is a status code, no scientific or biological aspect of that. He was saying that he wasn't sure whether he's protesting, you know, standing with them, but he wasn't sure that there was a racing aspect of this. So that's sort of, that's a head scratcher to me. So people who see out of the eyes of being white in this society somehow can't make the connection. So that's another thing that that we need to do. I like the thoughts of the family as to, I heard a proposal for a commission of truth and reconciliation, or truth and inquiry, something along those lines, where what happened in Greensboro, that's South Carolina, right? When I think it was a revolutionary communist began led a demonstration in the Ku Klux Klan. I think that's the one where they opened fire, and they had a special commission. So that's one option, and I definitely agree that we need to shake up these city council people. They rubber stamped broken windows, which is the direct cause of Eric Gardner's death. And Utrice, give us some thoughts on Romali Graham, because police run into him breaking down the door into his house in his bathroom. And 2 years ago, I saw Constance Malcolm, his mother, at one of the protests talking to a reporter. And 2 years on, after the judge threw out some type of a conviction, 2 years on, the Justice Department, who she appealed to, hasn't moved a finger on it. And I'll listen to the rest of my beloved family and yourself on these thoughts. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Maybe Sarah would pick up on that. Sarah from Dallas, you're on the air.
Greetings, Utrice.
Thank you. To you,
well,
too.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings to you and the PRN audience, Utrice. And,
thank you.
Yes, ma'am. To partially answer Ma'at's questions about the truth thing, there is no reconciliation. What do we want to be reconciled to? You see, we use these words and we throw them out, and we always say we want to be reconciled. Reconciled to me means to say if I have a loved one that we have a problem and we need to resolve it and then, you know, try and mend the relationship and get back some semblance of what we had before, then that is a reconciliation. But we have never had a relationship with the white supremacist establishment, and we should not want to have a relationship with it. That establishment needs to be totally destroyed. So we need to get the truth matter, but we don't need a reconciliation, because I don't want to be reconciled to that. To get back to your question, Utrice, that you were asking what it is that we need to do, we need to, these young people, I'm glad that they're out here and they're not listening to the elders out here, at least the bad advice given to the elders, because they tried to co-opt them by taking them into this meeting at the White House and tried, and I heard a few of the people who went to the, a couple of the young delegates who went, and a few things that they had to say. But we know that there are still going to be a few out there who are kind of trying to fence straddle, and they might get co-opted and get sucked into it, especially like these Dream Defenders, because when I'm hearing that name, and I've heard a few of them speak before, and they sound a bit wishy-washy, and I'm not quite, you know, knowing where, what position they stand on, because they don't really have a position. But organization, to quote the late ancestor, Dr. Kwame Ture, that's what they need to do. They need to organize, see what they need to do, and they need to know that this is not something that you're going to do just for this holiday season, and then it's going to be a flash in the pan, and it's going to be over with. This year, which commemorated the Montgomery boycott, that went for over a year, where these people were determining what it is that they need to do. These young people are going to have to decide, get a plan, decide what it is that they need to do, and they need to focus on it. All of these,
but not just the young people. You see, the older people have a job. The older people have some work to do. They have some serious baggage to get rid of, and one of it is that they're transferring the consequences of their inaction to the younger people.
Yes,
they don't deserve
right.
it. You know, the older people are responsible for the fact that the city council has done absolutely nothing and gotten away with it, or that the state government has done nothing and gotten away with it.
They're exactly
the ones who are voting in the Democratic Party.
You're exactly correct, Utrecht, because our inept leadership that we've had, and one of the things is truth. If you cannot be honest with yourself, Utrecht, you cannot be honest with anyone. And a lot of the things that we do when we try to tell our children that even though race might be a concept that was orchestrated in order to maintain a system of supremacy by a certain group, We are living under that system right now, and we are the consequences of what race is. We cannot go around here telling our children that they don't see color, that color don't matter, that they're colorblind and all this other foolishness. Because if I walk up into one other black person and they tell me that, I might be liable to get go to jail for assault charges. Because there is such a thing saying color. You run a traffic light that is red, and you try and tell a cop that you don't see color. There is such a thing called color. So while we're living in this construct of race and racism where there's a tiered system of color, where white is at the top and black is at the bottom, we better tell our children the truth, because this is what's hitting them upside the head. These past 5 years, 50 years of integration, where they've been integrated and they've tried to downplay themselves and try to make themselves fit into a system and try to negate their ethnicity, this is what's clobbering them now. And now that they're seeing it, because all of these police officers involved in these shooting deaths, they're all under the age of 30. From the person, New York Pantaleo, he's 28. The other man that shot Akai Gurley, he was 26. The people that shot Tamir Rice in Ohio, he's 26. And as well as Darren Wilson, they're 28. These are all colored cops under the age of 30. So there is something going on in the home with these children where they're coming out with these ideas, and it's not the old fogey, these old fogies, as we're trying to say, these old racists that are 70 and 80 years old who need to die off and then everything will get better. It's the younger generation, because these are the same generation that was out there picketing and marching back in the 60s, burning their bras and talking for women's lib and all of that. These are the ones that are producing these children that are out here right now that are doing this killing. So we can see that it's a continuation.
We see that we have work to do, and my focus here has been on the fact that this is a troubling situation where we have an industry that has spawned up again around the deaths of people, the brutal deaths of people, and the leadership here is also showing very bad signs.
Mr. Crump or Mr. Parks, because as I was saying before, they're on to another case. Now they're in Ohio with the Rice family that they're mm-hmm. there. Because I heard Crump on a station out of Chicago and yesterday where he was crying about whatever it is he planned on doing for this family. You see, these people, as you said, they trample on the bones and the blood of victims, and they go from case to case, and they don't intend to solve anything. Their ticket is the ambulance chase. And to get money. They're not about justice. They're all about getting money to line their pocket. So he have all of these well-known cases, Utrecht. You have that case out there in Valdosta, Georgia, where he's working on that case. He's also working on this case out, you know, the Brown family. Now he's out there in New York, and he's in Ohio. He's pretty much spreading himself all over the country. And then that's
no, but a lot of these cases, don't forget, a lot of these cases he came in on as the appointed attorney, if you will, mm-hmm. by Al Sharpton.
Exactly.
So this is what gives it the industry aspect, that, you know, you have Sharpton and then you have all these things that are coming with it, including the lawyers and whatever else is with it.
Yeah,
it is shameful.
Deal.
It's shameful.
Yes,
thank you so much, sir, for
You're
your
welcome,
call today. 888-874-4888. We do have to deal with this, and the time is now. There's no point in deferring this at all. There's no point in delaying it. There's no point in denying it. It has to be dealt with. This is a situation where people in a leadership capacity, they have assigned themselves as leaders in this area. They have taken ownership or established a monopoly here, and they're giving the impression to all of America that they are transacting business in the interests and the name of the black community. But the evidence is suggesting that is not happening at all. From Florida, Rob, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm agitated.
Me and you both. I think one of the things that people need to realize is that the way I compare this situation is like we're playing a big game of musical chairs. And I see our society and our way of life just deteriorating as a whole, and you're starting to see more and more people's chairs being removed from the game. And you have all these talking heads on the media that are saying, you know, you just got to take it. And that's because they've been assured a chair for a very long time, and they don't see their chair being removed anytime soon. And that includes Al Sharpton. I mean, he'll turn on his own people who put him up on that pedestal to even further himself more. And perfect example of that was this weekend of Saturday Night Live. They did an opening skit on imitating Al Sharpton, and you know, they say imitation's the greatest form of flattery. So I think we have to try and show people that this is a corrupt system as a whole. And I think people need to find their aha moment, you know, where they can grasp onto one thing and maybe it makes them dig a little bit deeper.
Thank you. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think this is one of the benefits of seeing. I mean, the physical manifestation that is evident in the demonstrations and the protests, you're seeing all kinds of faces, all kinds of ages, all kinds of religions and so forth. And this is a remarkable thing. Because what we're seeing is that it is resonating with people now that the conduct of the state as expressed in these particular cases is just so anti-human that they are reacting from the point of view of what humanity calls for, what it should be and what it absolutely should not be. And it is encouraging people from all different strands of life to come together. We are clear that the motivating factor, just the same, it's a very sad thing, but it has been consistent that the starting point from all of this is suffering and death and needless death of people of color by the state. And they had gotten away with it, talking about your musical chairs. That's one of the chairs that had been in place for a very long time. And somehow for this particular, I mean, the confluence of things makes it so clear that this is not spontaneous. This is not, these things are connected and people are responding. So I think you're right about in your observation. Thank you for calling in and contributing that today. So the question is, what are we going to do? I always ask that. You have information. What are you going to do with it? How will it enable you to do business differently or to tackle these situations in your own way, in your own sphere of influence, and make a change? Because we see where this is going. It has already gone too far. And it has gone this far without interference and without interruption. And yet we know the truth. We know what the situation is. And why, therefore, if we know these things, do they still persist? That's the question. Earlier this year, I talked about the conversations we need to start having, not only with each other, but within our own communities as well. We have major contradictions and they are stymieing our progress. They're suffocating us. They are retarding our growth, and they are working in an antithetical fashion against us. And still we let these folks off the hook. We let them off the hook. And this is a time when we see people taking charge now. They're stepping forward very bravely. They don't have a map necessarily, but they have the courage. And you can't deny that that is the number one requirement. You have to have courage. And they have the courage to step forward. And they're stepping forward by the tens of thousands. And they're stepping forward in the face of the effort to stamp them down, to discourage them. And still they're stepping forward and taking what they see as their rightful place to raise their voice against what is happening. And where are we? Where are we in all of this? Other than the fact that we, by our silence, have basically created the situation. We have helped the situation exist. We have encouraged its existence. We have to change. And it's not enough to be some kind of a theoretical or hypothetical exercise. These things are real. These people are behaving this way. And they seem to be free to do whatever they wish to do. Jesse Jackson long ago destroyed the Rainbow Coalition and yet still walks around as minister with portfolio, transacting business in the name of the black folks. And we let it happen. And so he's able to do whatever it is he wants to do for his private business, his personal gain, but still walking around as some kind of a ambassador at large. And Sharpton is doing exactly the same thing. And we have this bizarre and macabre new industry now, in which, again, with the energy of the people and the permission, the tacit and explicit permission of the people, they are misrepresenting that they are transacting business in our name. And we let them do it. Question for us to deal with, it seems to me, and we better get down to business pretty soon. We have to ask the members of the city council why they have not taken care of business. This police commissioner should have been fired a while ago. They should have called a commission of inquiry a long time ago. They should have demanded an explanation of all of these activities and the incredibly high number of citizens of the city of New York who have been dispatched from life by members of the New York Police Department. And not only to have an inquiry, but to have action behind it. Heads should roll here. People should be fired. People should be recalled from office. People should be punished severely. But they don't have the guts. And we have to deal with that as a fact. Leadership, the elected leadership at the local level has failed absolutely miserably. There's nothing that you can say here that you could say, well, there's hope. Because it's almost unanimous that nobody is willing to step forward and take on the system or take on the party. They talk about it, but the evidence suggests they haven't done diddly. That brings me to the end of the program today. I hope that this two-episode segment has caused you to rethink some of these things associated with this case, and that we are in a very bad position, but at the same time, there's a great reason to be optimistic based on what we are seeing emerging here as people power. We should support it, but we should also imitate it and we should get involved. This is also a message to us to get off our butts and get involved. It is a pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Stay here, right here. Coming up next is The Infectious Myth with David Crow. You could reach me always by sending me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Let me know how these programs are resonating with you. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
A great big stone wall stands there ahead of me, but I've got my